Hello, you're listening to a podcast by Speak Up Radio, sharing some of the features and interviews we've done with inspiring people and organisations across London. Here, you'll get all the chat, insights and information, but you won't get any of the music, and that's because of how licensing works. To get the full experience, tune into the radio station 24/7 by visiting www.advocacyproject.org.uk/speakupradio. This work has been supported by Imperial Health Charity. Hello, you're listening to a podcast by Speak Up Radio, sharing some of the features and interviews we've done with inspiring people and organisations across London. Here, you'll get all the chat, insights and information, but you won't get any of the music, and that's because of how licensing works. To get the full experience, tune into the radio station 24/7 by visiting www.advocacyproject.org.uk/speakupradio. Hi, I'm Luke, the station manager at Speak Up Radio. Today I spoke to Brian and Nanu from Migrants Organise. Migrants Organise provides a platform for refugees and migrants to organise for power, dignity and justice to enable meaningful inclusion and integration. They combine advice and support for individuals affected by the hostile environment immigration policies with community organising, advocacy, research and campaigning to help dismantle structural racism. I am joined by Brian and Nanu from Migrants Organise. Would you both be able to introduce yourselves, say your name, a little bit about yourselves?
My name is Nanu. I've been living in London for a few many years now. I am a volunteer for Migrant Organise, coordinating women group. And I'm myself an asylum seeker.
And I'm Brian. I'm the legal organizer at Migrants Organise. So I give advice and casework support for our members. And I coordinate our project, which looks into mental capacity and the immigration system.
Nanu, do you think you'd be able to talk a little bit more about the women's group?
The women group is a kind of group of women who are asylum seekers and refugee. Is more than 100 women, I think, because we register every time people come to Migrant Organise. These women have been through a lot of things, traumatizing from their home country. Mm-hmm. And we come together to support each other. It's a group is just for women. So when we have activity, we do all sorts of things. We can have meditation. Somebody can come to speak to us about health. Mm-hmm. Everything, you just name it. So we're just there to support each other because I think we have, our story is kind of something in common everybody have. So we feel free to talk to each other.
That's great. And that's fantastic. That sounds like such a helpful group. How long have you been involved with Migrants Organised, Nanu?
We are in September, I think it's 2 years now.
2 years? Great.
Yeah, time flies.
Well, I'm excited. Yeah.
Yes, because I came to Migrant Organise September 2019, yes.
That's a long time ago. How did you find out about Migrants Organise?
As I said in the beginning, look, myself, I'm an asylum seeker.
Yeah.
I came in England not as an asylum seeker. I came as a student. Mm-hmm. But then during my study, my life changed completely. Mm. And as a graduate, I thought I can't just stay laid back doing nothing while I'm waiting for a decision to be made by the Home Office. I have to do something meaningful for myself and for helping other people. So one day I was just going through internet looking for which organization I can, contribute or have a job for to get experience and help other people. I saw a lot, but then when I just saw Migrant Organise, it was very interesting. And so that's how I found about Migrant Organise.
Brilliant. Thank you. So you talked a little bit about being an asylum seeker yourself. Seeking asylum in the UK must have been a very challenging process. Would you be able to talk a little bit about what it was like?
Yes, it's very challenging. And people think it's something easier when you come to England and you're seeking asylum. They just give it to you, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Just like that. But that's not how it is. I came here as a normal route by plane and went to university studies. And I'm not trying to talk about me. I'm talking about many people, but I'm just giving an example. When my life changed completely, I didn't think it's going to be the way it is. Because look, I think it's been maybe more than 5 years I've been waiting for a decision to be made by the Home Office. Sometimes I ask myself, what have I done wrong? And the way they treat people there, you feel like you are a criminal or something.
Yeah.
By the life I had before and now, I'm always asking myself a question. What happened? What went wrong? So it's not a system or a process that is very easy for everybody. It's very difficult and very challenging. Many things obstacle in your way that you don't know where it's coming from and how you're going to sort it out. But I might say it's very challenging and very difficult.
Yeah, it sounds it. Thank you for sharing a little bit of your own experience. So you've touched a little bit on the next question. So what do you think the main misconception that people have about the asylum process in the UK is?
Yes, it's not difficult. It's very challenging. It's something that changed people's life completely. Mm-hmm. I'll give an example, like when somebody's seeking an asylum, there's a lot of things you don't have the right to do in the country. Let's say for myself, I'm a graduate, but I can't work. Can't work to get salary and take care of myself. I don't have a permanent accommodation because while I'm not working, how can I pay rent?
Yeah.
It's kind of a punishment while you are in the process. You must have a solid nerve to be in this process until the end. It's not easy. That's why when people waiting for, imagine this, people can wait for 10 years, even more.
Yeah.
They sorted. And think about that person, how are they living their life? And in the process, Home Office might forget you. They forget you completely. Mm. If it's not for other organization, let's say like Migrant Organize, helping people, nobody out there knows what we're going through. During the COVID, I must say we were forgotten. We are forgotten from the Home Office because I can be dead today. Yeah. They don't know. Because we are not in the system. That's what I call it. It's like we live in England, but we are not known. We've been forgotten. So it's very tough.
There was a huge issue over lockdown. I mean, it's been a long-term issue, but no recourse to public funds was particularly acute over the lockdown. So people weren't able to get that kind of support that they should have been entitled to. You mentioned asylum seekers don't have the right to work. They also don't get free NHS care, do they?
No.
And they're not able to work. And as you say, you can't rent accommodation. You can't find a permanent home. But you know, on top of that, the process is also very, very expensive, isn't it? Like it costs a lot of money to submit an application. It is almost impossible, really, to, you know, it's very, I think what you're saying about needing to be very strong is so true.
Yeah, it is true. The process is not easy because, I mean, like you said, is to get a solicitor. Let's say legal aid solicitor is not easy. You might be out there because you don't know the process how it works and you're struggling. You have those private solicitors who not helping you much. You work all your time with no positive result. That would be an example for my own life because I've been with people helping me let's say my family relative said, I know a solicitor who can help you with your case, which they did, but nothing came as positive result until I came to the migrant organized. And when I came to migrant organized, I came for volunteering to work.
Yeah.
For myself. But then this good people asked me one day, well, Nanu, you are a very intelligent woman and you're young. Why are you doing voluntary job? I explained to them my story. And they did invite a barrister to look on my form that my private solicitor did. And she truly said to me, she said, Nanu, I'm not saying this to scare you, but it's very rubbish. So if you don't mind, we can find you a legal aid solicitor, because first of all, you don't work, you don't have money.
Yeah.
So luckily, I was lucky to have a legal aid solicitor who are going through my case now. I'm going to have a positive result. But it's not easy for everybody to have that kind of solicitors because people out there, they don't know how it works. If you come especially to the country you knew and you don't know any organization, nobody is there to help you.
I mean, I think I really like what you said, Nanu, about migrants being outside of the system. And I think it's very intentional. The government has a name for this policy and it's called the hostile environment policies, which I believe like people outside of the sectors and who are not migrants themselves are often unaware of. They don't realize how much difficulties, to put it mildly, people face all the time, and like how much they are prevented from doing, you know, reasonable support, going to the NHS, going to work.
Thanks, Brian. Yeah, I think that that's really true. And listeners, if you want to think about maybe how the hostile environment might affect people, think about when you apply for a new job, you have to show a passport, don't you? Or you have to show, if you go to a hotel these days, you have to show a passport. And all of these things, you know, become, it basically means that asylum seekers and refugees find it very difficult, you know, to find jobs, to find places to stay, that kind of thing. So thank you for that, Brian. So we've just touched on really the beginning of a very, very difficult process, and that there's a lot more detail it would be great to go into. I wondered if, I mean, let's talk, it seems like a very challenging, as we keep saying, process. I wonder, what do you think the impact of this process is on people's mental health, Nanu?
I mean, this is, it's clear that the process caused many people sick of mental health. Because, I mean, look, the thing we said already, a human being living and you don't know what happening to you tomorrow or next tomorrow, you have no right place to stay. I mean, the hostel environment is, I mean, home office can give people sometimes a room, but the living there is like animal living. People wake up in the morning, they don't know what to do. And this is some people who have, an example I'm going to give it, women group that I work with. Most of them have children and they are single mothers. And then they have no penny to feed their children. They don't know if their children can go to school. And I mean, naturally, these people have mental health problems. It's simple. Yeah. It caused a lot of problems to people, and people realize. People out there are sick.
Yeah.
That's because of this simple process that people think is simple, but it's not simple. It's very difficult.
That's a great way of putting it. Thanks, Nanu. It's hardly surprising, is it? It's such a challenging environment for people. So we've talked a little bit about Migrants Organise. I wondered if and Brian, you might want to come in on this. For asylum seekers and refugees, what support is available? So maybe what Migrants Organise do offer, maybe a list of your services and other services that people can access.
Yeah, so I think when it comes to asylum seekers and migrant communities, and the charity sector is, you know, a lot of people do rely very, very heavily on the charity sector because, again, because of hostile environment policy preventing them from getting statutory support. They can register with the GP in theory, but Migrants Organise actually runs a campaign around this called Patient Not Passport, because there are issues about, you know, GP refusing to register patients as well because they don't have an ID, for example. They might have an asylum seeker registration card from the Home Office, but a lot of GP surgery receptionists don't really understand what that is. And they want a passport, for example, or a driving license, which again, asylum seekers and migrants are prevented to have. So that's why a lot of the time it comes to charities to kind of step in.
Yeah.
Migrants Organize, we run a community program, which, as the name suggests, kind of provides a holistic community ongoing support for migrants and refugees. So we provide advice and casework, immigration and other, like all other connected welfare issues, essentially like destitution, housing, community care. And then we supplement this with mentoring and buddy scheme, which offer personal support and emotional support, and also various different classes and activities, one of which is obviously the women's group that Nanda has been really helpful with.
That's great. Thanks, Brian. We know that accessing mental health support is usually important to access other forms of support. For example, something like disability benefits. Is the situation the same when it comes to asylum seekers or migrants?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the Home Office has this kind of obsession, I would say, with medical diagnosis and medical support letters. So for example, when you're applying for asylum support accommodation from the Home Office, first of all, you already have to be destitute first. So I think this actually goes back to one misconception that people often, have. If you're not destitute, you can't access these accommodations. And as London said, they're really rubbish. And a lot of the times you will be dispersed outside of the place you apply to. So we work in London. A lot of our members have a lot of informal support network, or they're already plugged in into different charities in London. But this, most of the time, it's not taken into account. So then they'll be dispersed in Sheffield or in the middle of nowhere in Wales or in Scotland even, where they have to readapt again. And they don't really accept when, for example, me as a caseworker advisor who worked with the member for 1 year or 2 years, saying that this man is really vulnerable, he has mental health issues, and he needs to stay in London where his support network is. The Home Office doesn't accept that. They want a medical professional to see the person and write the supporting letter. And again, if you going back to my previous point about difficulty of accessing services like GPs and the NHS, then it becomes like it's a chicken and egg problem. You can't access your GP support, so you can't get the medical letter. And because of that, you will be dispersed outside where you will have even less support.
Yeah, I think that that's a really important point. So asylum seekers and refugees, as you're saying, Brian, are expected to just move around the country, aren't they? To totally uproot and have very little control over where they end up. So I wonder if this is quite a leading question. I can see that there's an obvious answer. But do you think the issue of mental health is talked about enough when it comes to asylum seekers and migrants?
I think not. If you are not in connection with any organization who can help you, because people are sick out there. But if you don't come across an organization, let's say migrant organizer, who can refer you with another organization who are dealing with mental health, somebody can be out there, die as well because of mental health, but they don't know how they can get help. I don't think even the system think about it, what people go through.
No,
They would just mess you up with things that doesn't even make sense. I'm going to talk about, because there's something they call reporting as an asylum seeker. You have to go to the Home Office to show yourself your face if you're still in London, which I always ask myself, what do they care? Like, if I am tired today, I say, I just want to leave. So you're going to say, yes, why? And then you have to travel this long distance. I was living to Southwest London, but I have to go to Hounslow. And they don't even care how you finding money to pay transport.
Yeah.
Report. and you have to be in a queue. It's cold, raining, or anything. Nobody cares. The important thing for them to see your face. And people who do this kind of thing, of course, they have problem of mental health, because you just wake up in the morning saying, okay, I have to go, because deep down you're scared that if I don't go reporting, they might deport me to my own country, and you have to do your best to get there.
Yeah.
And all of this is problem.
Yeah. And,
I mean, like I said, if you go, you don't have anybody to help you, the system doesn't help with mental health. No, they don't even think about it.
I absolutely agree with that. I think there's this a bit of an attitude almost, like with asylum seekers especially, that they have to be grateful, sort of. Like, you know, it's a kind of like, you know, you're begging the Home Office for a status, and then you have to do all these difficulties, and then once you get it, you just go away and be grateful about it. But, you know, that shouldn't be the case. There's no kind of, as Anu said, awareness of what the process is like for individuals, their experience, and the mental health issues that the system caused.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That sounds... Nanu and Brian, what can the general public and listeners to this show do to help asylum seekers and migrants?
Yes, look, I think people should donate to those organizations that are helping asylum seekers. Because if we have to count on this system to come for help, there's not any help.
Yeah.
This organization are helping massively, and people don't see the way they help. They help in many different ways, which I can't tell you all of it. They've been helping me for that. But for them to come to help me, other people have to come to help as well, which is by donating.
Yeah.
Anything you have can help somebody out there.
I think educating yourself will be like, is really important as well. As I said, I'm sometimes like quite shocked by, you know, how many people out there still don't know about the hostile environment policy. And obviously, you know, it's my job, so I'm facing it day in, day out. But at the same time, it is like a really big policy that the government has implemented for the past, I don't know, 10 years at the very least.
Yeah.
And there's still so many people out there who are, you know, just completely unaware of what's happening. Even though, you know, the Daily Mail has constant news about refugees and asylum seekers, and then they, you know, it's kind of one side of the story, and then the other side, the whole side of foreign policies, people are not bothering to educate themselves and raising awareness about this.
Yeah, I think one of the themes of what we've talked about so far today is like how important the charity sector actually is for supporting asylum seekers and migrants. Because there's so many hurdles you've got to jump through, and there's so many things, you know, to do with money and to do with, you know, getting the right support, which just aren't provided for you. You know, they're really hard to get hold of. And so, definitely supporting charities and organisations which are involved in that kind of work is really important. But to either of you, I wondered, before we close up, if reminding listeners or introducing listeners to what rights asylum seekers and migrants actually have in the UK?
Well, this is quite a difficult question to cover, just because, one of the idea behind the hostile environment policy itself is to make things just really complicated.
Yeah.
Even among, like, you know, legal advisors and practitioners, there is a lot of confusion sometimes in terms of like what people are actually entitled to and what's not. I think in general, however, there is very little that asylum seekers are entitled to. So as I mentioned, with housing and destitution support, they can access it from the Home Office, but only if they show that they are already destitute, meaning straight homeless or can't afford. They can usually go to college and get some education, but then there's no assistance in terms of funding. Again, it's a barrier because there's no right to work, there's no right to rent, you can't get a driving license, or again, the ID issue that we mentioned. People can register for a GP that is free for primary care, but secondary care is not free. If you have to go to hospital, basically, including maternity care, for example, which a lot of women, our members, need, they will be charged for that. And if they can't pay, then that will count against their asylum applications or any other immigration law. Social care is not acceptable as well. What else is out there? I think
not a lot.
Yeah, most of the time it's just
not accessible.
Yeah, there is legal aid to a certain extent, but it's been heavily cut. I mean, this is across the board, not just immigration, but that's why it's really, really difficult to get legal advice, especially when you're outside of London or Manchester, like big cities. There are really a lot of legal deserts out there, and it's a big problem.
Yeah, no, thanks, Brian. That's really helpful. Okay, so we've been talking for a bit over half an hour now, and I think it would be really useful to have some song requests to play on the show.
Okay. Brian. Well, I was thinking about Make the World a Better Place by Michael Jackson.
Okay, cool.
And I mean, at the same time, it's because the issue we're talking about is quite a sad issue. And I don't want even the song to be sad, but I like the song and because what we're talking about here is just to see how the system can make this place a better place for everybody to live. Mm-hmm. Because when people are seeking asylum, I mean, most of the people, when they come here, that's mean they've been in their own country, life is not what they were expecting. They're coming here to feel safe. Protective and mm-hmm. safe. But then when they come here, they feel like they are unwelcome with the process that is very slow and complicated and difficult. And I'm just gonna ask for this song so that we should make the world a better place for everybody to live, not a difficult one.
That's a great choice. Brian, would you like to request a song?
How do we get two songs?
Yeah, you get two songs.
Yeah, so
that's what's all. Okay. I still really know what song am I listening to at the moment. The new Ed Sheeran song. It's very catchy, so I think people will like that. I can't remember the name though.
I can't remember the name either. It's a catchy tune, but not a catchy title. You know.
Ed Sheeran is catchy.
Anyway. I'll look it up. I'll play an Ed Sheeran song. Okay, great. Well, thank you both. Thanks so much for joining me. And it's great to talk to you. You can find out more about Migrants Organise at their website, which is
migrantsorganise.org.
Great. Thanks, Brian. Thank you for listening to our podcast today. If you'd like to leave us any feedback, you can email us at speakup@advocacyproject.org.uk, or you can go to our website, www.advocacyproject.org.uk/speakupradio. That's all one word. Thanks so much for listening, and do let us know what you thought.